You're listening to Panel Borders, which is the podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and in a change to our previously advertised show, I'm talking to Brian Anderson, indie comic book creator whose comic So Super Duper is serialized both on the web and in print, and tells the tale of a young gay superhero with practically no powers to speak of, and who in the first few issues is yet to come to terms with his own sexuality. If you tuned in expecting to hear an interview with Joe Sacco, that interview will hopefully be rescheduled later in the year. But Brian's comics, while lighter in nature than reportage from Palestine or Gaza, are an amusing and evocative depiction of coming to terms with one's own nature in a world full of unattainable role models that are designed to promote homoeroticism. To quote seasoned comics reviewer J. Caleb Mazzocco, "If you've been reading superhero comics for very long, chances are you've read some pretty gay stuff. But I'm pretty confident you've never read anything quite as gay as So Super Duper writer-artist Brian Anderson's ongoing adventures of Psyche, the least useful member of the premier superhero team, the Amazing Noughts." While that may be the central conflict of Anderson's story, conflict seems a pretty strong word for such a light book, Anderson approaches his storytelling like something between a comic strip and a sitcom, devoting time equally to Psyche's conflicts with the frosty queen bee of the team, his relationship with his platonic best friend, his struggle to prove his worth to all the heroes with more combat-ready powers than super empathy, and the conflict between people's expectations of what is gay and what is straight, and what the reality of gayness and straightness is. All told in little character sketches that vacillate melodramatic soap opera and character-based comedy. I'm talking to Brian about his love of the superhero genre, mixing autobiography and larger-than-life characters on the page, and becoming a publisher of other creators' work to help promote LGBT comics. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I first came across So Super Duper, probably like a lot of people, via Newsarama. I was wondering if you could talk a little about how the comic got onto that website and what it was like serialising it 2 pages a week.
Well, I originally created the comic book to go on the web, and I was going to just do it on my own website. And then I ended up going to a local comic book convention, and I decided to print up the first 32 pages or so as the first issue, and it was so well received that I decided just to stick to print. Then fast forward a year or so later, I was actually writing reviews for Newsarama, a comic book reviewer. They had me occasionally, you know, post reviews about the books that I was reading from Marvel and DC and other more established comic book companies, and those people who were doing the reviews ended up taking over the blog section of Newsarama, and my editor asked me, "Hey, would you be interested in posting So Super Duper on the website?" And I said, "Of course, are you kidding me?" You know, like, how great would that be? So then it's kind of funny because it came full circle. I originally planned to do it online, went to print, and I'm back to doing it online.
And, I mean, this isn't your first experience of webcomics, because I read your autobiographical comic, Unabashed Billy. So when it came to your becoming a cartoonist in the first place, were you thinking of being primarily a web comic creator, or did you want to be in print from the start?
Well, you know, I'm very hampered by my artistic style, like, no bones, the fact that I'm not much of an artist. So I originally just wanted to write comics, but I realized that getting into the comic field as a writer is nearly impossible. So I decided that I would just go ahead and pencil the stories myself. So Unabashedly Billy, actually, I drew years and years before So Super Duper, and I kind of put it to the side and never thought about it again. And then I decided to try again with So Super Duper, and I thought, heck, I'll draw it, and what's the worst that can happen? You know, people could hate it. So I decided to do that, and then when I went back and I released Unabashedly Billy, I figured I would put it on the web first and then do a print to go along with it in case people wanted to pick it up and keep it.
Mm. And when it came to feedback for the first comic that you did you get many people writing into your website where it was first hosted, or was it when you started printing it that actually you got more feedback from readers?
Yeah, I would say when I first printed it, because I think when you're a comic book creator, you kind of work in a bubble.
Mm.
So you really have no idea what the response is going to be until you actually put something out there, you know? I would assume it's kind of the same like Jim Cameron in Avatar. You know, he spent how many years working on that movie, and he had no idea what the response would be until it actually premiered. You know, so you put so much effort and time into something, and you just hope for the best. So the first feedback I ever got was when I went to the local comic book convention in San Francisco, and I printed it as a first issue. And the funny thing is, I had no idea what I was doing in printing, and I used a small printing company to print it for me, and I only published like 75 copies because I didn't have any expectations whatsoever. And my files were all wrong, so when I submitted them, the book I got back from the printing company was in magazine format. It wasn't in comic book format. And I almost freaked out because I got it like 2 days before the convention, and I'm like, this is a nightmare. No one's going to buy it. I'm a total idiot. How did I not know that? You know, it's just those things that you learn. So I went to the convention with these oversized books and this little table all by myself. I had no idea what to expect. And people actually picked it up, and my boyfriend, who was with me at the time, laughed because someone would say, oh, I'll pick one up. And my first response was always, you will? Like, I was always shocked. Like, you're actually going to buy this? So people actually really responded favorably, and I thought, oh, well, maybe I'm onto something.
Or maybe by printing it magazine size, they thought you were doing a bold statement with your first comic.
But I think they did. I think it's funny because people think things are on purpose, because my first issue I had come out, I'm the worst self-editor of all time, so I can never catch my own mistakes. I look at something 50 million times, and I never catch my mistakes. So when I published the first issue, it was riddled with spelling errors and grammatical errors, and I was so embarrassed because I didn't see any of it until I had this like bossy lesbian friend of mine read it, and she pointed out snootily, oh, by the way, did you know you have lots of errors in your comic book? And I was so offended. I was like, what? You are so wrong. You have no idea what you're talking about. So then I went to the book, and she actually circled every single error in there, and I was flabbergasted. I cannot believe what an idiot I was. And so somebody who actually bought that book that had all the errors in it, he said that he thought I had done it on purpose, and it was part of the character.
Well, I suppose both doing autobiographical comics and doing comics in general, when you're learning the craft as you're doing them, is very much like growing up in public. So I think people are very accepting.
Exactly. You're definitely right.
What's the small press scene like in San Francisco? Are self-published comics stocked by many comic shops, or is it more of a specialist scene?
No, it's pretty big. You would be surprised. There's quite a large scene here of independent comic creators, and I think it runs a gamut of being online and also actual print books or both. And I know within my own peer group, and I consider my peer group independent queer comic book creators, there's easily about 15 or so people that I know who create their own comic books just within the San Francisco area.
Mm.
And on top of that, there's a whole slew of other people who create their own autobiographical or whatever type of comics they have online. So I was invited to go to the San Francisco Cartoon Art Museum a couple months ago. They had an event called Monsters of Web Comics. And since So Super Duper is also on Newsarama, they invited me. And there was about 10 or so people of us set up in the museum, and we were just showing people our work. So there's a quite big scene of independent creators, and a lot of local comic book stores will actually carry our stuff, which is great.
Cool. How many comics had you done before you did the first issue of So Super Duper?
That was the first one. I mean,
oh, really? Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I created Unabashedly Billy years before, but it just kind of sat around in my drawer. And the first one I ever actually wrote or drew or even tried to create was so super duper that I actually put out. I mean, when I was in middle school, I wrote and drew my own comic books for my friends, but that was just like, you know, on lined paper that I did for fun.
So was it primarily a love of the superhero genre that got you into comics, or was it the lack of decent gay representation in superheroes?
I would say that, you know, I am a huge comic book nerd, much to the chagrin of my boyfriend. So there's a lot of comic book paraphernalia in our apartment, which he wishes wasn't there. but, you know, I just love this whole superhero genre. I've been reading comic books since I was 8 years old, and I've never stopped all these years. And I just love superheroes, and I've always wanted to do something. My dream has always been to write comic books as a career, but that's nearly impossible to break into unless you're some amazing person. So I decided, why should I wait around and nothing ever happen? I'll just write my own, you know? And since I am gay, and since there's not a lot of gay characters in comics, I figured, why not create a gay comic book about a gay superhero and not have it be pornographic? Because a lot of comic books that I read that are queer related are usually highly sexual, and I thought, why not just have like a fun, cute comic book with a queer character that everybody can enjoy, that's not hitting you over the head with the sexuality? He just happens to be gay, but he's also a superhero.
I mean, you're quite self-effacing when it comes to the artwork, but I think because So Super Duper is a comedy and it's quite light in the touch, your cartoony artwork, I think, very well suits the material. Did you ever wonder, when it came to doing a superhero comic, whether doing it in the cartoony style was perhaps going to alienate people? Or did you think that as comics have matured in more recent years, as more alternative cartoonists have actually got into the mainstream, that in fact there was a greater market for comics that were a bit more cartoony and could actually deal with issues like gay representation?
Right. I wish that I could say that my art was cartoony on purpose. I had like a goal or motivation behind it all. But to be honest with you, that's how I draw, and that's probably the best art I can deliver. So, unfortunately, I fall into the cartoony realm. Well, maybe not unfortunately, but I fall in that realm because that's all I can do. So I wish I had more talent in that regard. I really do. And it's funny because people on Newsarama, some people, hate me on there. And I mean, they loathe me. And I don't think it's they loathe the story per se, but they loathe the fact that my art is so subpar to their standards when it comes to comic book superheroes. Because as you know, when you read superhero comics, you expect a certain level of creativity and a level of polish when it comes to depicting those books. So I'm no Jim Lee, and that's painfully obvious to anybody who can look at my stuff. But, you know, I hope that I'm able to convey my message enough that people, like you said, can enjoy it for what it is. And what it is it's just supposed to be bright and fun. And, you know, there is elements of my own personal life in it, but it's just basically a fun superhero story.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because it does pick up on some of the themes from your Billy comic, the whole issue of a person's identity and their struggles with coming out. And so, you know, it seems very clear reading So Super Duper that while it's a comedy and while it's in the superhero genre, you also wanted to tell the story of what it's like to be a young man and what it's like, you know, coming out in a community that perhaps, you know, it's not quite so easy to do so.
Yeah, exactly. You're dead on. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know, most people who know me know this, but I'm also Mormon, so I converted to the church when I was 18, and I went on a mission to Guatemala when I was 19 for 2 years. So I was a devout Mormon, and I think part of the reason why I joined the church is because I knew that I was gay and I was partially afraid of it. And so here was this religion that came to me that kind of offered me this opportunity to maybe not be gay. So I understand the whole notion of, like, coming out and how hard it is, because I really struggled coming out by still being Mormon and realizing everything I was giving up. Because in the moment, Mormon culture, it's, like I said, it's more of a culture of a society than it is just a religion. It impacts every aspect of your life. So when I came out, I knew I was walking away from all that. So I think part of that goes in, like you said, into unabashedly Billy is, like, that's very autobiographical, because when I came out, I was at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, which is highly Mormon. And if anyone at the school found out I was Mormon, I would have been kicked out because it's against their honor code. So I'm not allowed to be Mormon. So I was dealing with coming out as a gay man, starting to date, and trying to keep it under wraps while still at the school so I could graduate and then hopefully return to California where I was born and raised. Mm. So part of that also falls into So Super Duper, where you don't have a lot of gay characters coming out in super teams. And so I thought that would be something to play off of.
Mm. Well, certainly, I think whenever the issue of gay superheroes comes up, normally because a character in a mainstream superhero comic becomes gay, or, you know, a new character is introduced into the storyline so that they can deal with coming out issues, there's always massive furore in the letters page, which always seems very strange.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I would have thought that an awful lot of gay teenagers would look to superhero comics as both a form of escapism and a sort of wish fulfillment device, because it's all about accentuating homoeroticism, about accentuating the male physique. And so I wonder if there's actually some kind of fear in superhero comic readers that because they're reading something that is actually a little bit gay intrinsically, once the issue is sort of out and proud, for want of a better phrase, then that just terrifies a lot of readers. Or maybe, you know, it's just the case of a vocal minority.
Oh, you know, I think you've really hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think it's a big fear factor, and that's why a lot of comic book companies don't have a lot of gay characters. It's like what you said. I mean, if you think about comic books, especially superhero comic books, if you boil them down, what they are soap operas for men, basically. And, you know, no man wants to admit that he watches a soap opera. But, I mean, look at superhero comics and all the years and years of storytelling and, you know, this person married this person, then she died and she came back to life. I mean, that is like the biggest soap opera of all time. And I think, like you said, coupled that with the male physique and, you know, depicting these beautiful men and, you know, looking great and fighting and being strong and virile and all that stuff. I mean, you can't escape the homoeroticism in it. So I think when you present that to somebody and say, hey, here's a gay character in your favorite medium that you're reading, it frightens them because they don't want to ever see anything in themselves probably that they could be okay with gayness or they could identify with it or something like that.
Well, I think it's been quite funny recently, the fact that in X Factor, the writer Peter David has made this longtime character Shatterstar gay, and the creator Rob Liefeld has said in the media that if he ever gets control of the character again, he'll make sure that he's not gay, which I think, you know, is ridiculous. I mean, how you could be so terrified of one of your characters actually having some sort of mature character development, and B, to sort of say that in some respect the character that you created has been tainted and you're going to purify them in the long run. I mean, it's just, it's
right.
Almost the level of playground rhetoric.
It is. It's kind of like, I mean, you have to know when you create comic books for Marvel or DC, if you create a new character, those characters belong to that company. So that would be like someone saying, who created Superman, you know, I don't like that he's married to Lois Lane. I never wanted him to be married. I never wanted him to be straight. I'm going to go back when I get a chance and take that away. It's like, that's ridiculous. Like, that's part of the character now. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just what's happened. You move along. Why do you have to rebuff it and complain about it? How does that personally affect you? You know what I mean? Like, it's like you don't. That's not your character you control. It's part of a bigger universe and a bigger company. So get over it.
You spoke about superhero comics being a lot like soap operas, and certainly that aspect of the superhero narrative is something you very much accentuated in So Super Duper. The way that the lead character Sykes' internal monologue is very much about his dilemmas, about desire, about who he fancies, who he shouldn't fancy. When it came to creating the comic, presumably that was going to be one of the major concerns right from the start.
Right, and I think what people really were surprised at when I collected the first comic and the first issue is, I think I really surprised them in the fact that here was this super flamey gay character who obviously was gay. I mean, there was no way he could not be gay. And just like you said, just his internal monologue and the way he reacts to everything, I mean, it's painfully obvious that he's gay. And then at the end of the first issue, when he gets confronted by it, he says, "What are you talking about? I'm not gay." And so I think that caused that really surprised a lot of people, because I think, you know, people put a lot of stereotype on the flamey person, which in most parts I find usually true, because I'm kind of a fruity, flamey person myself. So I embrace that about myself. You know, I'm not ashamed of it. But I think, you know, you see a flamey person, you think, oh, that person's gay. But when someone stops and says, "I'm not," you're like, oh, wait a minute. Am I being stereotypical? Am I judging them? Am I, you know, wrong? And so I think that's kind of what I want to play with, is that here's this character who's obviously gay, yet he himself doesn't know it yet. And so how do the characters around him react to that fact? And how do they deal with him when they think he's gay, they know he's gay, but he says he's not, he doesn't even know he is himself? And again, that kind of pulls from my own life, because I didn't come out until I was 26, if you could believe it.
Wow.
And every single person that I would meet, like a new person that I would meet in church or otherwise, every single mother effing person would say I was gay behind my back to my friends. And I would be so pissed, because I at that time, I think I was so buried that I didn't realize that I was gay when I was still in the Mormon church. Mm. And so I would be so mad. I'd be like, how dare you call me gay? You know, like, I am not gay, gosh darn it. And so it's funny to me, because I think that there's a level of people not knowing who they really are. And there's a lot of that in all things in life.
Mm. Reading various bits of your biography online, I've come across basically the idea that you've been reading superhero comics since you were 8. So I was wondering, in terms of struggling with your own identity, you know, you talked about joining a Mormon church and issues of how that probably made life more difficult for you. But in reading superhero comics, did you find any characters that you identified with when you were growing up?
You know, it's funny, because I always identified more with the female characters. Mm. I never really had any favorite male characters. I mean, to me, they're always just... It's funny, because I think for most people, the female characters are just kind of the hangers-on, and the male characters are the main people to watch. But I always felt like the stupid male characters were the hangers-on, and I wanted more of the female characters. So I don't know if that's just intrinsic of gay men, that we seem to be drawn towards strong, powerful women. But, and the funny thing, that's, like I said, a stereotypical characteristic of a gay person, but I have that stereotypical characteristic where I am drawn towards strong, powerful women. So like in the X-Men, I always loved Rogue and Storm and those characters, and I guess in a way I identified with them in a certain degree, but not in a gender way. You know, I just identified with their strength and their femininity and their power and how beautiful they were and fabulous. And I think, and part of me, I wanted that as well.
Mm. So in some respects, would you say then that there was something lacking in superhero comics when you were young, that you didn't find male representations that appealed to you or that you could identify with?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think even still today, I don't really find myself drawn towards male-driven comic books. I don't really read a lot of solo books that star men, because I just never really felt all that drawn to them. I've always, if there's a female-driven comic book on the market, I'll buy it. So I read Power Girl, I read Supergirl, I read Wonder Woman. You know, I read all the female-driven comic books out there, and I read a lot of team books. But I don't think I really read, like, solo male books, just because I don't really tend to identify with them as much.
Mm. I mean, there's been a fair amount of debate in the comics press over the last year about how a lot of female representation in comics is still very cliched and still very much hung on, you know, making characters look like models and appear in ridiculous poses. And that's something that you comment on very explicitly in your comic Sex and the Superhero, where there's been like a running gag in comics over the last year about female characters pulling an absolutely impossible pose that would break their spine on the covers of comics. And so you have one of the characters do that in yours.
Yes, definitely. And I think, the funny thing to me is, like, I kind of like that to a certain degree, but at the same side of me, I feel like I shouldn't like it. So I kind of conflicted, because, you know, I want my female superheroes to be sexy. I want them to look great. I want them to wear tight clothes. I want them to be fabulous. But I don't want them to be exploited. So I think there's a fine line. And I think sometimes those poses can be very, very overly exploitative. And I don't, I mean, I'm torn because I see why that's attractive to people, but I also feel like at certain times it's just inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And I know that certain artists, you know, specifically at DC, really enjoy drawing females in that way. And it's just kind of funny because, like, what woman, what female superhero would go into battle ass first with her spine twisted and her fist ready to punch somebody? That's just ridiculous. No one would do that. And so I really wanted to play with that and twist it and put it on the male and see how people would feel if it was a male hero who was learning that pose and using that for, you know, to exploit himself. Like, does that change the idea of the pose and women, or does it mean the same thing?
Mm. And have you had much feedback from readers about that?
Yeah, I mean, they actually love it. I think they get what I'm doing, and they, of all the comments I get on that book, I think that is probably the thing they like the most. And they really enjoy the fact that I make a point of showing how ridiculous that pose is, and I just really wanted to twist it, and I want to be like, if it was a man, I think my next book, if I do another book of sex and superhero, because this was a one-shot, mm-hmm. I really want to explore that more, and I want to do, like, a cover with, like, a man who looks like sexy on the cover, thrusting his crotch out at somebody, and tentacles wrapped all around him or something. You know, like they do with women. Like, how would you respond to that if it was a man having that done to him?
Well, I think particularly since Dave Sim has been doing Glamour Puss, then I think someone should be doing the male equivalent.
Exactly.
The colorist on your comic, Selena Hernandez, I believe she's taking over the art for issue 9 of So Super Duper.
Yeah, she is. And I think the reason why I did that is because I worked with her on Rainbow and Diva, and I think she's fabulous and phenomenal. And, you know, I was doing issue 8 of So Super Duper, and it just dawned on me that I just don't enjoy drawing as much as I do writing. And it just started to get to be such a chore for me. And I felt like if I don't enjoy it and love it, maybe I need to take a break from it. And I just feel like, especially in the last few issues of Soap Super Duper, my minimal art has gone even more minimal. And I just feel like, you know what, I really need to make sure I deliver the best story possible. And if I need someone else to step in and to help me draw it, then that, I think, would be the best course for me. Because I just, you know, I've been really bombarded and attacked by people online with my art style. And I'm not saying that's why I'm not doing it anymore, but I feel like it's gotten to be such a chore that I'd rather have someone more capable take it from my hands for a little bit.
Mm. Well, like I said, I mean, personally, I think your art style suits the material. But at the risk of being slightly cynical, it occurs to me that Selena's art is slightly more manga-esque, and that's an entirely different market of comics. So maybe you could pick up entirely new readers with issue 9 onwards.
Right, and the funny thing is, she did a lot of, when we were doing a book together, she would send me the preview pages before, like the sketches and, you know, the black and white preview pages, and I would always tell her, less manga, more Archie, you know, more adolescent comic book, less Japanese influence. So I think she really worked hard on getting away from that somewhat, and issue 9, I think she did a really great job of capturing more of the fun cartoony style.
Mm. You said that you didn't think you had much of a chance breaking into mainstream superheroes as a writer, but I think perhaps you're being slightly disingenuous, because I was reading today that Tim Fish is going to be writing Northstar in the forthcoming Nation X comic book. So I was wondering if you had actually approached any of the major publishers so far with treatments or suggestions for comics that you might do.
Yeah, I had actually last year I was in communication with a couple editors at Marvel. It was back when they were still receiving unsolicited pitches, and they really responded to a pitch that I gave them that starred Northstar and Dazzler. And my pitch was to put them together as kind of like a Booster Gold and Blue Beetle kind of one shot, where they would kind of team up, and, you know, he's the ultimate gay superhero and she's the ultimate fag hag in Marvel Comics. And, you know, Dazzler had, like, a huge gay following because how could she not? So I thought that would be a great pair. And I got a couple of people, a couple of editors. I sent a couple letters and they responded. And I think what might have done me in was they asked me for my resume. And I, at the time, I didn't really have much of a resume in comics. So I kind of ended there. And then I kind of was talking a lot to Ralph Macchio, another editor over there at Marvel, and I sent in a Power Pack pitch to him, which starred Power Pack in each of the main Marvel female superheroes. So it would be like Power Pack and She-Hulk, Power Pack and Spider-Woman. And he really liked my pitch, and he told me that they were not going to be doing any more Power Pack stories for a while. But then recently they just announced Power Pack and Thor. So I don't know if it's just me, like, I don't have much of a name for myself yet, but I think they really like my ideas, so that's something.
Well, you know, fingers crossed, keep trying.
Right. I mean, it's hard to break in, because I think really, just like in a job, general job, someone has to really believe in you, I feel, and they have to say, here's somebody that I think could go somewhere, I'm going to give them a shot. And I think the hard part is finding somebody who wants to give you a shot without actually ever having to met them in person. So I think meeting people, editors in person, probably makes a bigger difference than just sending something blind.
Yeah. Well, talking of publishing, as well as printing your own comics, you've been publishing other people's comics. You're right. Publishing the serialized comic A Waste of Time and Trina Robbins' graphic novel California Girls. I mean, how did that come about?
So you know, I love self-publishing, and I don't do it just so that I can maybe one day break in. I mean, that's the end-all hopeful goal of mine. But I do it because I love it, and I do it because I have a story to tell, and I just really want to do something with my spare time. So I met this other gay local comic book creator, and he, I think, is amazing. I love his art. I love his ideas. He's very cynical and very sarcastic and a little bit naughty and dirty, and I love that. And so I told him, let's do a collection. He was like, no, I don't think anyone would be interested. And I'm like, are you crazy? Of course they would. You're amazing. Let's do it. Let's do one issue. We'll put it out there and see how it goes. And the response was so great that we did a second issue. And then Trina Robbins actually lives down the street from me in San Francisco. So we're kind of friendly with each other. And I've been a fan of hers since I was probably 8 years old. And so I always loved California Girls when it came out in the 80s, and I told her, let's do a collection. And she said the same thing. Are you kidding? No one's going to care. That's so old. Who's going to want to read that? That's dated. And I said, no, the 80s are back. Let's do it. Let's bring the 80s back. So I agreed. She agreed to it, and I collected her book for her. And I also have another book that I do called This Gay Existence, which is by another creator, Adam Fair. And he's also somebody who's been doing books stories for a while, so I just collected his second issue as well.
Cool. Because in terms of gay graphic novels, there aren't actually that many on the shelves, so I think, you know, you're very much doing both comics and your community a service.
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you. I don't know how much of a service I'm doing, but, you know, I'm just trying to put myself out there and tell hopefully positive, fun stories that have gay characters in them. I don't think gay stories always have to be about, you know, AIDS and my life sucks and I got kicked out of my house and, you know, blah, blah. Why can't a gay story be happy and fun and, you know, lighthearted?
Hear, hear. Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, my pleasure. And I must say, having read the first 8 issues of So Super Duper, I'm now, you know, desperate to find out if Psyche and Comet will ever get together, so I'm going to keep reading for one.
Segueing nicely between this month's theme of masculinity in American comics and next month's series on webcomics, you can find Brian's website at www.sosuperduper.com. That's SOSUPERDUPER.com. And there are links to the serialized version of his superhero comic and more on our blog www.panelborders.wordpress.com, where a longer version of our interview is available as a podcast now. February brings a pair of gay comic book creators exhibiting their work at the Drill Hall in Bloomsbury in London. Kate Charlesworth and David Shenton have both seen their cartoons printed in the former British broadsheets and are exhibiting their work in an exhibition called Drawn Out and Painted Pink throughout February. And you can find more info at www.drillhall.co.uk. Next week, I'm talking to a trio of web comic creators who have found fame doing monthly superhero comics, but are doing more personal work on the internet as part of Transmission X. And my guests are current Batman and Robin artist Cameron Stewart, plus Carl Kerschel and Ramon Perez. And that's at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.